All right, folks, this is Rabble Rousing Rich Bergeron. Well, it's only a day early for us, not for the fans. They'll be listening on their regularly scheduled program. But anyway, we will be trying to connect with Tom later. We might not get him. He's probably out of the loop since we tried to throw this together by email today on the fly. But anyway, we got a lot to cover. We got...
For me, but I just got a new gig at rantsports.com, and they have a little partnership deal with USA Today, and the pay sucks right now because it's kind of a growing outfit, but they have a lot of weird rules and different setup than I'm used to, but it's all focused on search engine optimization, so I'm going to learn a little bit, and everything's got to be opinionated, which is nice. So you can BS a lot.
That, right?
Yeah. I guess that's why they call it rant sports.
Yeah. And here's the best thing, but you got to start somewhere. You know,
right.
I mean, I was lucky. See, when I left my old job back in 2009, I was lucky enough at the time they gave me like a 7-month severance lump sum, so I could collect unemployment. And benefits were fully paid for 7 months. So I was good for a while, then when I started to pay for my benefits, then things were crunching a little bit. and I jumped the first job that was offered to me, and they kind of dicked me around, but, you know, I was loyal, and when they finally gave me a start date, I took it, and I was miserable. I should have known it wasn't a good place, but I was desperate.
Yeah.
This past year, I was a little bit luckier. I had squirreled some money away, and I had gotten some money in a little bit of an inheritance. So, and I had squirreled that away, so I wasn't as desperate, and I could look for a better fit. And I think this is. I think it's a good fit. I'm knocking on wood here. But there's a growth potential, which wasn't at my other place. And so we made the deal, and, you know, we'll take it from there.
Cool.
It was funny when I was interviewing, because I met with the HR director, a very nice young lady, a couple years younger than me, and she went to school with two good friends of mine, one guy that I go to the gym with three times a week.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah, so we were joking about that. Then when I got in there with the director, and he said something, I forget if he took in my resume and saw my email, filling box one, and he said something, and I said something about boxing, and he said, really? I said, yeah, you know, I'm a former 10-time All-American, Lock Haven University. Really? And I said, and now I'm like, oh, I got his interest. I'm like, I do a, you know, a weekly podcast radio show online. I said, we talked to, you know, a lot of good guys, and I'm sitting there, and this guy says, really? And I'm like, yeah, I trained in South Philly, and he's getting into it. And then I told him that, you know, going up for the Marciano statue dedication. I'm like, well, that'd be great. This guy might be pulling me into meetings every day just to talk about fights.
Nice.
I can certainly do that.
Right. All right, I'm going to try to tell him one more time here. We get going on the boxing. Speaking of boxing,
your call has been forwarded to an automatic voice message system.
He's got his phone shut off.
I guess so. Speaking of Lock Haven, by the way, I got a message from our old buddy Scott Cadver. They just hired a new wrestling coach. Scott Moore, I think his name is. So,
I know they were looking to hire a new one. I didn't hear anything else.
Well, we don't really cover wrestling, so we're going to get right into the boxing this week. I did not watch any of it, unfortunately. I did watch a little bit of Friday Night Fights, but I was kind of going back and forth all night. So,
I
didn't catch it all.
A little bit of the Friday Night Fights, but I was also kind of flipping back and forth with the baseball game because the Phillies are on the West Coast. But I did watch, you know, Sergio Moore. Not a big fan of his. Even since he was on the Contender, you know, he doesn't have a style that tremendously excites me. And I just always thought he was just kind of arrogant and standoffish. Maybe that was the character he kind of played on the Contender. But whatever. My friend Mike cannot stand him.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I know he won a unanimous decision. Like I said, I really didn't follow it too much. The fight that impressed me this weekend was Triple G. Not that he confused with Triple H the wrestler, but Triple G the boxer, Gennady Golovkin, who just made mincemeat out of Matt Macklin. Three rounds, and the body shot he hit him with almost put a lump in my throat.
I read about it. I didn't watch it myself.
I know that left hook to the liver. That's Mickey Ward's famous punch, and that he knocked a lot of guys out with. And it's funny, I always notice guys that are real good with the left hook to the liver are usually your shorter, compact guys. Your Mickey Wards, your Vinny Paz's, Julio Cesar Chavez, Ruben Alvarez. Those were guys that were the masters of that left hook to the liver. That was a punch that was a favorite of mine, because I was always short, compact, trying to get inside, and I could almost explode into an upward motion and just kind of drive it like a half hook, half uppercut, right into the solar plexus, right underneath the elbow. I'll tell you who I hurt pretty bad with that punch, and he held on for dear life, and I don't know how he stayed on his feet, was your boy Brian Kerr from Nevada. That was right when I hurt my hand. I hurt it with the left hook of the head in the first round, and then I dug the hook to the body in the second round, and it hurt me probably more than it hurt him. My hand was hurt that bad. But it's a punch. If you can get a guy good with it, look what Bernard Hopkins did to De La Hoya. There's so many instances of that punch and just ending a fight so fast.
Well, Golovkin didn't waste any time either, setting up his next fight, but it's probably not anybody you've ever heard of. I never heard of this guy, but he's already made an offer to a guy named Martin Murray, who's 25-1-1. Golovkin's
Moved to 27. Didn't Murray fight Sergio Martinez?
Who? Martin Murray?
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't have BoxRec in front of me, but...
I'll tell you right now, because I know the name. And I know Matt Macklin fought Martinez and was stopped in the 11th round. So
right.
Now you're looking at a guy that, you know, just completely blew away what Martinez did with Macklin. Because Macklin gave Martinez a tough fight, and Golovkin just blew through him like he wasn't even there.
Right. Well, this story about this whole possible fight says that we've already made an offer to Martin. The only problem is his unresolved issues with a U.S. visa. If he will deal with this and would be willing to meet with Gennady, we are happy. This would be a November 2nd fight, and the deal has already been agreed with as far as HBO goes, where I guess Gennady has a contract. Murray is 30 years old. He lost a contentious points decision to Sergio Martinez in Argentina back in April, the only defeat of his career, while Golovkin's murderous punching power halted Macklin the third round.
Look at this. He fought Martinez's hometown of Argentina. I remember I watched that night, the 27th, there were two cards on. It was a Showtime card and an HBO card. And I remember this fight really wasn't exciting over the first four or five rounds. Martinez was kind of stalking him with his hands at his waist. And Murray was keeping a real tight guard. So Martinez is stalking, Murray's playing defense. Not really exciting. So I flipped to the other channel, whoever else was on that night. And then it got a little exciting and a little close. You know, Martinez got knocked down in the eighth round, and in his hometown, he won 115-112. So that's 8-4 with the point taken away for the knockdown. Maybe it's not in Argentina. It might have been closer than that. Now, his only other technical blemish on his record was a draw about a year and a half ago to Felix Sturm. That was over in Germany. Now, that was a split draw. And that's in Sturm's hometown. So you figure you have one judge gave it to Sturm, 116-112. One judge gave it to Murray, 115-113. The other judge added a draw. So likely Murray probably won that fight. He technically could be undefeated going into this fight. But also, looking at his record, those are the only two guys that I know. I'm looking at there now. Even one of his last fights, okay, Sturm was 36-2. But right before that, he's fighting a guy that was 8-0. That's kind of weird. So not like he's fought a lot of big names here. So we don't know much about this guy, but we sure know a lot about Gennady Golovkin.
All right. Well, we do have a lot more to cover and pretty much stock in the news. Do you have anything else on boxing you want to get to before that?
No, I mean, let's go to the MMA news, and then we can go to what we have coming up in the sport of boxing, because, honestly, those are the only two cards we had over the weekend, the big ones.
Alrighty. Well, one of the big news stories from today is they finally decided what card Ronda Rousey and Miesha Tate will be fighting on. Working on getting an interview with Rousey for Ultimate MMA Magazine, but from what I hear on this... Tough 18 competition. It's pretty fierce as far as their rivalry. I read today that in addition to them having words with each other, they keep flipping each other off. So they actually have to not only bleep out their curse words, but they also have to blur out their hands in certain parts of the show. So it's going to be pretty intense, I guess. But it's going to be December 28th
this year that they're going to fight at UFC 168. No matter what happens there on the show. And the final lineup for the whole event has not been finalized yet, but it's definitely going to be the most anticipated, one of the most anticipated rematches in UFC history. And they definitely don't like each other, so it always makes it better, I think. But Dana White says, I'm telling you, they hate each other so bad, you're going to see a lot of blur marks. Every fucking time Ronda is seeing her, she's flipping off and getting in her face. So it's definitely going to be one of those things. It's going to be like a Ricardo Mayorga fight. It's not reality bullshit, White said. It's complete and total hatred. They hate each other. And obviously it stems from the fact that they fought already in March of 2012 at a Strikeforce event where Rousey beat Tate pretty convincingly and took her bantamweight belt in the process. So now they're arch enemies. We'll see what happens. I know we said that we don't really talk about wrestling that much, but I had to put this wrestling story in there, especially considering the big uprising in Egypt going on today. It's kind of funny, but it's kind of not funny. There's a story here about a female wrestler from Egypt who allegedly bit her Israeli opponent during a bout. Enes Mustafa Yusef Khorshid also reportedly disrespected wrestling protocol by refusing to shake the hand of Alana Kartish of Israel before or after their semifinal match at a Grand Prix event last month in Sassari, Italy. And FILA President Ninad Lalovic writes in an email to the Associated Press that the Egyptian female wrestler was immediately suspended. The sanction prevented her competing at the Mediterranean Games, which ended Sunday in Turkey. And Lalovic says, our legal commission will soon decide about the final fine. And despite allegedly being bitten, Kartish won the 147-pound match and went on to win the tournament. Her FILA world ranking improved to number 2. So I've had a little bit of wrestling experience, but I can't say I've ever been bitten in a fight. I've been kneed so hard in the mouth that my tooth went through my lip once, but I've never been bitten. This girl's probably going to earn a new nickname, the Mike Tyson of wrestling. I don't know if it drew blood or anything or took a chunk out, but with that kind of natural rivalry between countries there, I would think that it was personal. And MMA, sticking to MMA, another story here, kind of off the beaten path story. Josh Rosenthal, an MMA referee we talked about probably about 3 or 4 weeks ago at least, when he got busted for felony charges of conspiracy to manufacture and distribute marijuana. And he's going to be doing 37 months in federal prison for this. And he just got his sentence the other day. No possibility of parole before then. In addition, he also received a 3-year supervised release and was ordered to pay a $100 special assessment fee, according to a spokesman for the court. And the charges stem from a raid by federal agents on a warehouse owned by Rosenthal and his associate, Jeff Weller. The two were accused of operating a large-scale marijuana production and distribution facility in Oakland, California. The facility housed more than 1,000 marijuana plants, 6 million, I guess that's a little better than referee pay. But he hasn't been refereeing since the reports of the charges surfaced. And probably won't find it easy to get jobs when he gets out. But we may seem to laugh them in MMA. Probably the biggest MMA story this week is Anderson Spider Silva, who's coming up on a big fight with Chris Weidman. During one of these press events, he actually said that if he fights Jon Jones, he doesn't think he'll win. Which is
He's a very cocky fighter. So for him to say something like that, even though he will be going up in weight if that fight happens, that's pretty rare for him to admit something like that. And then, you know, on top of this, he wants to fight Roy Jones Jr. So just kind of weird to hear him say that. But his exact quote was, "If I fight John Jones, I don't think I'm going to win." So for that reason, that fight will probably never happen, because he doesn't want to lose before he leaves the UFC. And I know he's just signed a huge fight contract, 10 fights or something like that. So I would think he's going to stick to his own weight to ride that out. But definitely a surprise, especially for a guy who's on like an 8-year win streak. But this Chris Weidman, he's 9-0 coming into this fight. He's also unbeaten, even though doesn't have quite the experience that Silva has. So I know that there's a lot of people that are thinking that Weidman will win, but Vegas has Silva as a heavy favorite, and so do I. Here's a boxing story here. Carl Froch is back in the news. And he's taking on a guy who you probably never heard of as well, George Groves.
No, George Groves is a pretty good fighter. He just beat Glenn Johnson.
Oh, I take that back then.
Yeah, and Groves,
let's show you how much I know.
It was a decision, but he beat him pretty convincingly. He won almost every round. That was a few months ago, a year ago maybe?
Well, Adonis Stevenson was the mandatory, but got tired of waiting for the opportunity to fight Froch and moved up, or is it Froch? I forget. Is it Froch or Froch? How do you pronounce this guy's name?
I think he goes by Froch.
Froch, okay. That's what I thought.
Thanks. You quote me on that.
But, Stevenson actually moved up to light heavyweight to box for the WBC title rather than fight, Rock. And under the rules, when that happens, we go down the list to see who is next. We got down as far as Groves, and he has been made our mandatory challenger for Froch, according to the management team there. Anyway, let's see what it says about Groves. Now, in the latest IBF super middleweight ratings published on June 10th, positions 1 and 2 are conveniently not rated. Third place is occupied by Dominican and former FNU Combat Sports Show guest Edwin Rodriguez and Lucian Butte, who Froch demolished in May of last year, placed 4th. And South African Thomas Oosthuizen, who recorded a split decision 4-draw with Brandon Gonzalez on the weekend, is placed 5th with Groves at number 6. And Tucker also said, "We have sent letters to both fighters dated June 10th and asked them to start negotiations for a mandatory defense. The boxers will have until July 12th to come to an agreement. If they can't, we will then call for a purse bid." So we'll see what happens there. And Froch just turned 36, actually, the other day. Groves will be 25 for this fight.
You know what's funny? I forget who it was on Facebook. They were talking about Carl Froch, and they were talking about, you know, how back in the day, you know, 36, you know, you were on your way out. You were pretty much done. You were past your prime. And now it's like, 36 is the new 26, which I guess it means that I'm 26. but I remember back when Bernard Hopkins fought Felix Trinidad back in September of 2001. And I'll never forget, you know, part of the discussion there was Hopkins' age, which now is almost laughable because he's still fighting, you know, 12 years later, and he's still a world champion at 48 years old. But he was 36 years old at that fight. And I remember it was around the 6th round, which Bernard had won the first about four of the first 5 rounds going into the 6th round. And it was debatable that he won all 5. So now in the sixth round, Trinidad is really starting to amp up the pressure. And I just remember George Foreman saying, Allison Hopkins can sustain this. He's starting to look tired on the 36-year-old legs. I see him wearing down. And I'm there thinking, George, you should be the last guy talking about a guy wearing down because of his age, for one. And yeah, and then of course Hopkins, he kind of took the sixth round off just to kind of bait Trinidad in, and then he, you know, then went on and destroyed him from there. But you know, now it's like 12 years later, and he's still, you know, one of the top guys in the sport. And Trinidad's been long retired.
Well, definitely not too old to keep slugging it out there. He looked really good against Kessler there. And we'll see what happens. He's obviously got a few more fights left in him, and he's not getting thrown to the wolves, at least. Groves is a guy he could probably beat. We'll see. Anyway, we talked last week about Tim Kennedy before his first UFC fight. Went on a podcast, and it went viral, and now Dana White has gone ballistic, and he's come out, and I didn't read his full comment on this, but basically he said, yeah, we can get the fighter pay up a little bit, but then we're going to get rid of fighter bonuses for knockout of the night and all the locker room bonuses. And no more bonuses, we're just going to get base pay. Which is Dana White's way of saying, if you guys don't like it, get the hell out.
Yeah.
But this is pretty interesting, because I thought it was a surprise to hear the guy, Tim Kennedy, who hadn't even had his first fight in the UFC, come out and sound off on this issue. Usually, and actually, lately, it's been more guys who have been either just thrown out or left the sport themselves. So for somebody to step up like Kennedy, even though he was from another organization, Strikeforce, coming in out of that league, sort of, you know, not by his own personal choice, although I don't think he's complaining about, you know, where he's fighting particularly, just, you know, what kind of pay these guys are getting in general. But anyway, he now has come out and he's had to apologize. So that goes to show you what kind of grip that the brass has on these fighters. But he told Grapple Talk podcast, as we talked about last week, he said, it would be slim pickings to survive off what I make in fighting. It's good to have another job because the UFC doesn't pay very well. And then he had to take to Facebook and back off from those words. But obviously the UFC did get wind of his initial statement. And like I said, his plan to level the playing field, so to speak, for the lower paid fighters on the roster is do away with bonuses. And here's his quote. The bonuses are something we've been doing out of the kindness of our fucking heart. It was something we like to do. Apparently people don't like it. They want the lower level guys to get paid more money. All these fucking morons have no idea what goes into this and what it takes to build a sport and a company at the same time. And we've been very fair to the guys. So there you have it. You know, Dana White being Dana White. He's, I mean, it's one thing to say you have no idea, but it's another to say you have no idea when you guys at the UFC don't really give us an idea of exactly what these guys get paid for bonuses. Unless they are publicly named Fight of the Night bonus, or, you know, their salary and the fighter pay gets published for some reason by the commission. We don't usually know as fans. So, yeah, we are kind of morons because we have no choice about, you know, what we know and don't know, because you guys don't open your books at the UFC. So, you know, it's one thing to go and fly off the handle like he usually does and have something to back it up. But it seems like every time somebody mentions fighter pay, he just gets pissed off. And it's just like, you know, any argument that you have with somebody, and you're coming from a position of strength and knowledge, and they just get pissed off because they got nothing to respond to it with. And they get snippy about it, or snarky, It's more like his tone on this one. And, you know, he's like, I'm better than all of you because I know what's going on. Well, that's just because you're a bunch of secretive bastards and you're stuffing money in your back pocket as quick as you can. You know, and like I've always said, the guy's never fought a day in his life. We don't have even a old fight of his on tape that anybody can point to. Nothing. Not even an amateur bout. And he goes and walks around all day and shoots his mouth off and probably gets paid more than any fighter in a single year does. So he's got it pretty easy, and he needs to appreciate that and come down to earth a little bit on stuff like this. And, you know, address it in a way that helps people realize that, you know, if fighters think it's an issue, it probably is an issue, but for whatever reason, you know, he just takes it personal and then goes off the handle every time somebody mentions it. All you got to do is go out there and say, well, you know, we're not making enough money, if that's the truth, to spread the love, basically. Or, hey, these guys are making bonuses. You don't have to call people morons. You know, these guys are making bonuses, they're getting sponsorships, we're taking care of them, they got the UFC, you know, he's made these statements before, he's rationalized it before in a, you know, sometimes crude, but it's at the same time an informative and educated way. You know, he's lined up the facts. But in these situations, he's calling people morons, he's saying they don't have an education. That John Cholish guy is a stockbroker, just retired, and gave up a whole list of reasons why the fighter pay just doesn't cut it for, you know, his last fight was in Brazil and all the amount of money he had to pay for all his people to get down there, and it's just not economical for these guys to keep doing this. And for White to just kind of ignore that and just say, well, if you guys don't like it, I'm taking your bonuses away, and then we'll pay the younger guys more. It's just, that's the moron thing to do. And he's calling everybody else effing moron. So, I don't know. I think I need to write a rant sports article on this one. I was kind of pissed the other night because when I wrote my first story for them, I noticed that was the headlining story on there. Somebody stole it from me. But I think I'm going to go at it a different way. Rather than highlight that he's going to take the bonuses away, I'm going to wrap it up in a whole enchilada and talk about, basically, show me the money. If you're gonna call people morons and you're going to threaten to do this and that and you say you got to take away bonuses, show us why. Show us the real figures. You know, go talk to the Fertittas and, you know, you've had these big videotaping sessions before, big interviews where you guys sat down and talked about different things. You've gone out and released whole contracts. So why not sit down and decide, hey, we're going to make our figures public and go just right down the list and tell everybody exactly what you're taking home, what the Fertittas are taking home, and what the fighters are taking home compared to that. And the expenses, too, you know, if that's a concern, if you want to throw that out there as a reason why you can't pay guys more, tell us what the expenses are, you know. Even the live gate numbers don't get reported enough. And the pay-per-views, that kind of stuff. But there's so many other revenue streams that these guys have. And years ago, Dana White even threw a bunch of guys out because they wouldn't sign releases to give the UFC their lifetime rights to their likeness. And talk about a money deal. I mean, they must have been paid big money for that. And I don't know if they passed any of that on to the fighters because they don't publish this stuff. So show me the money is what I have to say to Dana White before you call me a moron. And this article even says, has the UFC been fair to the fighters? I can't answer that question, as the promotion does not disclose its financials and full fighter salaries. But the growing number of voices that seem to have issues with pay would lead one to believe that there are at least some concerns with fighter pay. So I guess we'll wait and see on how this goes, but I don't think we've heard the end of it. I think Dana White would like to have heard the end of it, but not so much. And, you know, the other thing is the UFC. Who knows how much the UFC makes just for these sponsors to approach fighters? You know, they have to pay a finder's fee, basically, to come in and put their label on a fighter. They have to pay the UFC to even approach one of their fighters to get on their shorts. So they've got to be cleaning up big time on these guys. And so it's time to start passing the buck. What I see. Anyway, as I mentioned, go ahead.
You know what reminds me, you're probably not going to recognize this name, but me from Philadelphia, his name still, you know, appears in a lot of my nightmares. The guy that owned the Eagles for about 10 years by the name of Norman Brayman. And he always, whenever I think of Dana White, it always reminds me of Norman Brayman. Norman Brayman was a guy that pretty much lucked out. You know, the guy that previously owned the Eagles was going bankrupt from bad gambling debt, that Leonard Post. So Brayman steps in, and he basically gets the Eagles for $65 million, which was, this was back in, 1985, which that's astronomical back then. First thing he does is he starts docking his own players if they took an extra pair of socks or an extra jock strap. I used to go to training camp when I was a kid, and he owned the team. There'd be a roster of like 80 players or 85 players. We've got 20 holding out every year on their deals. Every year. And every year he raised ticket prices. And all he did was just make life miserable for the fans. So the fans turned around and made his life so miserable that he ended up having to sell the team. Now he tripled his investment, made almost $200 million when he sold the team to Jeff Lurie, a guy from the Boston area. But that's what always reminds me of Dana White. A guy that, you know, he knows he's got you as a fan by the balls, and he treats his fighters like shit. And the one thing about Norman Brayman is that he always would never comment on anything. And he would, do shit like, I don't profit from owning the Eagles. Or why would I own a football team, for my health? What's wrong with me making some money? Well, either you're not profiting, or you are profiting. Well, what is it? And then finally, when they had an investigation in the league, and the numbers were revealed, he was the most profitable owner. Because part of the salary that he paid to himself. He paid an $8 million salary to himself to write the private on the books. And then also, but they always had, like, he had the lowest scouting. He had the highest ticket prices. His coaches were paid the less. And what eventually happened is what I think will eventually happen to Dana White. People are going to see through that. And once numbers really start coming out, fighters are going to say this is bullshit. You know, managers are going to say this is bullshit. Fans are going to keep saying, why is all this shit on pay-per-view? Why are tickets, constantly so expensive? And what's eventually going to happen is...
Not to mention the library of all the different organizations that they own now.
Yeah.
It's not on free TV anymore, anywhere. You have to buy all that stuff.
The guy with the most money tells the biggest lies. And that was the thing about Norm Brandon. He was a rich wizard, and he told the most lies. And one thing I said was, about 8 years ago, one of the greatest football players of all time and a Philadelphia legend, Reggie White, passed away at age 43. Reggie White was a guy that did a lot with charity. Reggie White was a minister. You know, he helped the poor. He helped, the homeless. He helped the underprivileged. He helped special needs children. He passes away. Norman Brayman's still alive in his 80s. Just a miserable old motherfucker. Out of Miami. In fact, he tried to block the Dolphins or the Marlins from getting a new stadium because it would have raised his taxes. But that's... Whenever I read articles on him, I think of Dana White. Which, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to see if I can find it online. If not, I'll make a copy of the guy's book and has a whole chapter just on this guy and how much of a piece of shit he was. And I'll send it to you just because you'll enjoy the read.
Yeah.
You know.
It's a very good analogy. I think it's pretty spot on because it is true that, you know, the guys with the most money tell the most lies. But
the biggest lies, yep.
No. One of the funny stories I like to tell about Dana White, I don't have any confirmation. It's typically, you know, it's one of those typical rumor type of situations. But I'm pretty sure it's true. I got it from a source that knew Dana White pretty well for a long time, for years. Somebody involved with the Zion situation. And they told me that Dana White got nice painting, and I forget who it was. I think it was like a, it was like a Dali painting or something, something big, a big author, like a big painter, like a Van Gogh or somebody like that. And he paid $5 million for this painting, and this was back when he first got a hold of some money from what they call a senior secured credit facility. So basically, they took a loan out to get dividends off of the UFC. And his cut of it, for whatever his 10% of the organization was at that time, was maybe $100 million. Well, no, probably not that much then, because the Fertittas owned a lot more of it then. So maybe like maybe 20 or 30 mil. Anyway, that's not really the important part. The important part is he went out and went on a big spending spree, and one of the things that he bought was this big painting for $5 million. So then a few months later he realizes, oh shit, you know, I spent way too much money. And
what did he spend that on?
He spent $5 million on a painting.
Holy shit, I can't believe you said that. And you know why?
Why?
Because in this very article I'm going to send you, it talks about the time Norm Raymond went and spent $4.5 million on a painting from a guy named Jasper Johns.
So they are alike. Anyway, the story gets better. So, a few months after he buys this painting by this really well-known guy, he has some money troubles. He's got to shed some debt and, you know, get out from under some of this stuff that he bought. So he doesn't want to sell his Ferrari or whatever. He ends up saying, well, I got to sell the painting. So he calls in an appraiser and gets the thing looked at. Come to find out, he paid $5 million for a print. It wasn't even the original painting. And he had no way to get his money back. He was so pissed. So pissed.
That's awesome.
And this person who knew him pretty well at the time said he'd never seen anybody more mad than when this guy found out that he paid that much for a print. The most expensive piece of paper known to man, I guess. So that just goes to show you, you know, what his investment skills are like. If it wasn't for the Fertittas and their money, he would have tanked this company a long time ago. He lost like $40 million of their money in the first few years. So, you know, it almost made them consider getting rid of the whole thing. So it could have been a lot different for the whole organization if it wasn't for their money backing them till the end. And now they've got to, they say they like his style and they like, you know, that he's abrasive and in your face and tells it like it is. And a businessman couldn't really run the UFC, but I don't know, I kind of beg to differ. I think that he's probably the most ill-fitting person for a top sports job that there could be in this world. Anyway, big UFC 162 event coming up this Saturday, and we probably won't find out exactly what every fighter makes on this one either. But as I said, Anderson Silva just signed a big deal for a bunch of fights. I think it's 10 fights. He's 33-4, facing off against Chris Weidman, who's 9-0 for the championship. So it's going to be five-minute rounds if it goes the distance. I doubt it will, though. I'm thinking Anderson Silva by knockout, because Weidman's more of a wrestler. So I can't see him being
as crafty and energetic as a Chael Sonnen with a 17-1 testosterone to epitestosterone level. And that's the last person to take him five rounds, or to the fifth round. So, I don't know. I think Weidman's very overrated. Although, if I was still in Vegas, I probably would just put money on Weidman just because he's such a huge underdog, just to see what would happen, you know. Maybe you might win. Also, Frankie Edgar's on this card. He's been dealing with a few losses lately. He keeps trying to go for the title shot and just keeps falling short since he lost his title. He's going to face off against a guy now with a pretty similar record. Edgar is 15-4-1. Oliveira is 16-3. Charles Oliveira is fighting. And we have Tim Kennedy, we just talked about. He's not happy about the pay, but he's going to fight anyway. And he's probably going to have to beat the ever-living crap out of Roger Gracie and turn in a pretty unbelievable knockout to get any kind of bonus out of this one after his comments. But anyway, he's 15-4. Roger Gracie, or Hodger Gracie, because they don't pronounce the R's. They pronounce it with an H down there in Brazil. He's 6-1. Mark Munoz is also on this card, facing Tim Boach, who's, I think, the guy from Lockhaven, right?
You know, yeah, I think you're right. He was after me, so that's why I don't really know him that well.
Mark Munoz is 12-3. Tim Boach is 16-5. And then we got one of the guys who convinced me by losing a fight that I should never get into MMA myself. Even though I'm still considering training, doing some training one of these days. But Cub Swanson got knocked out in like 17 seconds to Jose Aldo in a WEC fight a while back. He's on this card as well, and he's facing Dennis Seaver. Swanson's 19-5. Seaver is 21-8. And a guy who's back from his steroid suspension, Chris Lieben, 22-9, fighting Andrew Craig, who's 8-1. And I would think, unless he does pretty outstanding and doesn't lose, if he does win, he'll stick around. But unless he just ends up pulling off another zombie fight move where even in a losing effort he turns a lot of heads and slugs it out, this might be Lieben's last fight, whether he retires personally himself or the UFC lets him go. This might be his last fight in the UFC. He's one of those guys who could lose his job with a loss, I think, on this card, if there is anybody on this card. I like that. And we have Norman Park, 17-2, fighting Kazuki Tokudome, who's 12-3-1. I don't really know much about either one of these guys, but between them, they only got five losses in 30 fights. 30 other fights in addition to those losses. One was a tie for Tokudome. Then we have guy from my neck of the woods, New England, guy Gabriel Gonzaga, just unretired a couple years ago. He's only had one loss on that stretch since he's come back, too. He's 14-7, and he's fighting Dave Herman, another guy who just got off a suspension. I think he got popped for marijuana in his last fight. He's at 21-5 going into this one. And I just saw a story the other day. They actually tested him before this fight. They gave him a surprise test that he passed. So I don't think he's going to have those issues this time, unless he tokes up right before the fight. And let's see, we got a couple more here. Edson Barboza, 11-1, fighting Rafaelo Oliveira. I don't know if that's a relative of the other Oliveira on the card is fighting Edgar, but it's probable. And then we have Seth Baczynski, 18-9, fighting Brian Melanson. And finally, Mike Pierce, 16-5, fighting David Mitchell, who's 12-2. And that's a big pay-per-view fight, UFC 162. I don't have any information in front of me about what they're doing on the for the undercard, but usually it's on Facebook or FX an hour before the fight on FX, and then before that on Facebook. And since it's not in a foreign country, I think that's probably how they'll do this one. And back to boxing here for a little story on the amateurs, which is not going to be so amateur anymore, because the International Boxing Association plans to invite dozens of professionals to the 2016 Summer Games in Rio de Janeiro. Of course, that doesn't mean Floyd and Vladimir will be in attendance competing, but they're creating a pro boxing organization already in which member fighters can be paid while still retaining their Olympic eligibility. So the so-called APB will officially begin competitions next year. I know we've talked about this in past shows. But this is pissing a lot of people off now in the existing powers situation in boxing. And namely WBC Council President, or World Boxing Council President, Jose Suleiman, who we saw in person out there in Brockton. And other prominent boxing promoters are complaining that the APB is trying to muscle in on their territory. So, this past weekend, the AIBA fired back with a statement asserting that it is merely looking out for the best interests of fighters who, through its new organization, can earn a living while continuing to pursue Olympic aspirations. And AIBA understands the dreams and hopes of current professional boxers to compete in the Olympic Games, according to their statements. And professionals at the Olympics, of course, are nothing new. As we know, basketball and hockey have had pros, including the world's top athletes. And even though boxing is poised to do it for 2016, they might not make the shift so easily, and it's not going to be quite like these other sports where, you know, you have teams and ownership agreeing to it because it's not taking place during the regular season. But in this case, there is no regular season for boxing. It's all year round, every year. So it's going to be a different story. And you're going to have mostly guys who are just going professional as part of this wing of the amateurs. So they won't be able to go outside that wing of the amateurs to take fights, which will allow them to keep their amateur status. So it's not going to be a full-on, let's invite all the pros. It's going to be a different story. So it's kind of like dipping your toe in the pool to see how it goes here. And maybe if it does pan out to be something big and it gets the conversation going, that maybe they ought to have all kinds of pros from all kinds of circles, then that would be different. Maybe that would be a little bit more entertaining. But the thing I'm more excited about is that I think they're getting away, or doing away with the old scoring system, and they're going a 10-9 or 10-8 rounds.
That's the most important thing. You know, I know in a 3-round fight how difficult having a 10-9 scoring can be. You know, like with what amateur fights are. But at the same time, it's better than that crap they got now. Now, the one thing, now, what I was thinking about when you were talking about, you know, the possibility of using pros, and you did mention Floyd and Vladimir in there, two fighters that I could always envision. Now, granted, they're different stages of their careers, but I could always imagine trying to get back in the Olympics, one being Roy Jones Jr., because of that horrible robbery that happened to him 25 years ago. And then the other one being Floyd Mayweather, only because, you know, that scoring system really affected him. And I remember watching that fight. I was down the shore. Him and Tarver, I think, fought on the same day, if I'm not mistaken, back in 96. And I remember Tarver fought Vasily Girov, and I remember the announcers that he could see what the score was. You know, they're saying that Tarver's got to, he's got to get more active. He's got to throw more punches. He's down, like, say, like 10 to 8 or whatever it was. I don't remember. And, you know, but, I mean, even though more of an open scoring of the fighters in the last round, they got to watch their opponent. They can't be looking at a big scoreboard. And then same thing with Floyd. In Floyd's fight, a lot of people thought in a conventional, by terms of conventional boxing, he was winning. But on that shitty, you know, points breakdown, he didn't win. I could see Roy Jones trying to get back in it just because he is less relevant now. But Floyd, you know, and I'm thinking current. I'm not even thinking 3 years down the road. Who knows what will happen down then. But like, say it was right now, I could almost see Floyd saying, you know what, I don't need the gold medal. You know, I'm Floyd Money Mayweather. You know, I don't care. All at the same time, I could see Roy Jones, if it was right now, saying, you know what, I want that gold medal because it was unjustly stolen from me. Now, the only reason I could see those guys not doing it, for one, not getting paid for it, and number two, imagine a guy like Floyd Mayweather, the consensus number one pound-for-pound fighter in the sport. Imagine him losing in an Olympic amateur bout.
Right.
Because of bad scoring or, you know, fighting a three-round fight when he's used to fighting a 12-round fight. That was just my thought process on it.
Yeah, I don't think they're going to extend it to real pros anytime soon. I think this is just, as they're talking about it, just a way to get these guys some payment for their fights without eliminating their ability to compete in the Olympics and the amateurs. But they're also taking away the headgear, too, for all amateurs eventually, except for the very young ones, I think. So there's a lot of changes going on in amateur boxing, and I hope they're going about it the right way and that this doesn't turn out to be a disaster. But you know, obviously I think the promoters and the council presidents there and the sanctioning body people are just upset, because usually a guy's excuse to go pro is to sign with them and start going after their belts and getting involved in their system. So it's kind of like, you know, creating a minor league system without their consent or input, like the baseball major leagues have, the minor leagues, not necessarily the amateurs like college baseball is, but it's, you know, it's closely affiliated with the pros. And technically it is professional baseball, so. Same deal, different sport. And I think that eventually they might have more harmony together about this, but right now it's just going to be see it as it goes, see what happens. I don't know if it's a good idea or not, but hey, you got to do something to shake it up and get more people interested in boxing. And taking away the headgear and changing the scoring system and letting these guys have a taste of the pros might help. Then let's see what happens. Let's do it. And these guys that are pissed off should be pissed off, because they, you know, they're at a position where they've got so much confusion and crap going on in the sport and bad decisions and nothing being done to change it, that they haven't looked at that themselves doing anything to change it and make it better. They want to keep the status quo. And I like seeing them pissed off in situations like this where they're forced to deal with something different and see what happens. So I hope it works. Anyway, big story in the news this week, of course, is the George Zimmerman murder trial. And, of course, it's, you know, racially charged. It's probably not the best case for the news media to follow. If they would actually, you know, get into the real judicial system and find a more interesting case, they probably wouldn't have to look too hard. But this one is just, for some reason, one of those cases. It's all over the news every day, all day. They're starting to actually follow the trial firsthand with, you know, day-to-day coverage inside the courtroom on the news stations. And so, of course,
because there was an altercation involved before the shooting, mixed martial arts came up in the testimony. And it actually came up on both sides, believe it or not. And I was actually not really trying to watch it, but I was in the kitchen, and the TV was on in the living room, and they're talking about it. And somebody was on the stand, some medical expert, that Zimmerman had been seeing. And he told this lady that he had been taking MMA classes 3 times a week. And he had to go and shoot somebody because he got in a fight. So, I don't know, I thought that was more important testimony than the media made it out to be. But all the mixed martial arts sites jumped all over it and, you know, mentioned that it was in the case. But on the other side of it, one of the witnesses came out and said Trayvon Martin, who was the one who got shot and killed, was on top of George Zimmerman when this witness came out of his house and saw the whole thing go down. And he was in the ground and pound position. And one of the funniest things, even though there's nothing really that funny about this whole story, but one of the funniest things about the media coverage was watching how many experts they had talking about grounding and pounding and having no knowledge of MMA whatsoever. And just kept screwing up the phrase left and right. They called it pound and ground, and you know, he was grounding and pounding him, and just all kinds of bullshit that shows you they don't know what the heck they're talking about. So apparently Trayvon, whether he watched MMA or not, had Zimmerman in basically a full mount position and was raining down punches on him, according to one witness. So it was Zimmerman who had the MMA experience. Nobody mentioned anything he was doing MMA related. But apparently Trayvon had the better MMA position. So, I guess it was an armed MMA fight. Looking back on it. So I just thought that was interesting that that came into it on both sides. But it's getting into everything. I mean, we've talked about stories. Oh, what happened? Did we lose Tony? Lost Tony. Hang on. Okay, so we're back. And I was just talking about MMA, and sometimes we get these stories about MMA coming into the news for a good reason. Like, actually, a few weeks ago, I remember telling a story about how a guy stopped a carjacking from happening by using a chokehold on a guy. Other times, there was another story, I think it was over a year ago, that we talked about, because it was in the UFC lawsuit, about a guy taking down a person who was on a murderous rampage on the subway with some MMA moves. But this one's one of those bad examples of, like, you know, a guy beating his wife with MMA or something like that. And this one is just, you know, an MMA fight broke out that turned into a shooting match. Somebody brought a gun to an MMA fight, basically. So it's kind of not the best publicity MMA could get, but you know, I guess anybody looks for a reason to talk about MMA. And to interject, you know, a big story like that into the sport gives it a little bit more attention. But I just be nice to see some of these experts do their homework on it and use the term correctly, ground and pound. Anyway, that's all on that one.
Well, basically, some of my thoughts on it. I understand that, you know, it's a very racially charged incident, which is sad. It really is, because that should not be the focus here. It should be more of the fact that I know it's sad, because whatever the result is, the verdict, it's going to cause trouble. And the two incidents I can remember, and I just remember, and I,
and I don't want to make it sound like any I'm saying anything racial here, but I just remember when Rodney King was beaten back in 92-ish, and then those cops were acquitted, how it sparked the L.A. riots. And then a few years later, when O.J. Simpson was, you know, arrested for potential murder, and he was acquitted, and I just remember people cheering. And they weren't cheering because they were big O.J. fans. They weren't cheering, you know, wearing, you know, O.J. Number 32 Buffalo Bill jersey. They were cheering because of a skin color with, you know, a sense of crime against somebody of another skin color, and he was acquitted. I personally think he had done it, but the glove didn't fit, so he must have quit. with this situation, you know, I know, I mean, I have friends of mine that have pictures of Trayvon Martin on their Facebook pages, you know, and it means a lot to them, and I can appreciate that. But what are the facts here? Part of the problem is the culture of violence in America, where you have, like, these young kids, these wannabe thugs, you know, going out there and constantly, you know, doing damage and playing the role of gangbangers and all like that. Now, 16 years ago, a good friend of mine, a gentleman we've had on the show, Simon Carr, he had a gun. And a kid, 5 o'clock in the morning, was rummaging through outside of his house looking to steal bicycle parts. Simon came down and basically just fired a random shot, hit the kid and killed the kid. Now, Simon got jail time for that, but at the same time, it wasn't self-defense because the kid had not entered the house. The kid had made no threatening moves towards him. And it was a mistake that Simon had made. Now, what are the facts with this case here, the Zimmerman case? I don't know. I mean, if the kid had him down and was attacking him, punching him, kicking him...
Well, the best defense he has is that he claims that Trayvon told him, "You're going to die tonight."
Yeah.
There's differing reports on whether he reached for the gun or actually grabbed the gun.
Right.
I think
now
they proved that he didn't grab it.
Was it a legally licensed firearm? Did he have a legal license to carry that firearm?
Yes.
Okay. Now, here's what it comes down to. If Martin was attacking him and beating on him and going for that gun, Zimmerman has every right to operate with deadly force. Now, if Martin is walking down the street and Zimmerman's going, "Hey, kid, where you going? Hey, where you going? Hey, answer me," whatever, and Martin just keeps walking and he's got headphones on or he's just ignoring them, you know, you don't want to shoot that kid. If you think he's a threat, you think he's maybe going to rob a house or something, you call the authorities. "Hey, there's a suspicious kid in the neighborhood. You know, I'm doing neighborhood watch. I tried to communicate with him. He's ignoring me. He's walking away from me. He won't answer me. I've identified myself." You call the authorities. But if there's a physical altercation and Martin is, attacking, flailing away and going for his gun, you got to do what you got to do.
Yep.
You know, if I was in that situation, I'd shoot him for the play, to be honest. Hate to say it, but that's the God's honest truth. I'm not giving up my life, you know, for that.
Right. Well, you know, the whole situation of him having the gun on him like that, and the other kid not having any weapon, kind of throws a loop into it. I think there's a chance that he could get found guilty on a lesser charge of manslaughter. But I think, you know, there's 6 women on the jury, which is very weird. It doesn't usually happen. And I think motherly instinct would have to kick in for them to all come together and think he's guilty of something. But he does have a pretty good defense team, I think. So, there's a good chance they could just, you know, put up reasonable doubt enough that he gets off. But it's one of those situations where you can justify it either way, or, you know, you can say the guy's got to be to blame for something, because the number one thing that everybody can point to, and most people do, is that the cops told him not to follow the kid. But, I mean, there's no criminal charge for disobeying a cop, I guess. So you can't charge him with that. Anyway, it's kind of funny, when we were talking about that, we had a little skirmish between the cat and the dog of the house here. We had a brown dog and a white cat go at it. I don't know if you heard the barking in the background and the hissing.
No, I didn't notice it now.
Little race war, interspecies race war in the homestead, breaking out. No guns involved, though.
I mean, I spent, you know, time in the city. My dad used to work in the city. I'll tell you right now, if he did not have a license, you know, permit to carry a weapon, he probably wouldn't be here right now, with certain different instances. You know, and I remember back going to Martin Anderson Rec Center when I was training. I was young. I was maybe about 19, 20 years old. And one time, you know, we went into the rec center, and he went, you know, through the front doors, went straight through the hallway, through the back door, that's where the basketball courts were, and right to the left there was, before you went outside, was the Gatorade machines, Gatorade and soda machines and all that. But you went right through the doors, and you made a right, was where the boxing gym was. So I, you know, we were coming out of the boxing gym, and I was going over to get a Gatorade and search shots, and we knew the basketball courts empty. And you know, my dad, you know, got his weapon out, and all the people from the basketball court came into the boxing gym. And I just remember even the referee, who was like, he was panting, he was out of breath, and he goes, "This is bullshit. Because if we keep letting kids run amok like this, you know, it's, you know, we're never going to have, you know, any safety or any peace in this world." And that's the problem. You have too many kids, especially teenagers, and we're actually going into adulthood now, too, which is really bad. And especially, I don't like to do anything with race here. I'm talking about, you know, people of all colors, but it's a mentality of disrespect. Oh, Rich disrespected me. But I'm not going to go up to Rich face-to-face and, you know, want to go up and settle things either by talking it out or brawling it out. No, I got to pull the gun out, which is bullshit.
Right.
But it's all a matter of disrespect. Oh, he disrespected me. Oh, he walked in front of me when I was going to get a water. He disrespected me. Oh, he, you know, said something, you know, when I was, you know, playing basketball. He disrespected me. Well, my thing is, what have you done to earn respect?
Yeah.
You have a job?
Well, the other thing, too, I mean, obviously the other big story in the news is the Aaron Hernandez situation with the Patriots. And here's a guy who had everything going for him. Just signed a $40 million contract and just could not get away from the gang scene and his past and his history with the... I noticed it during the hearing when they brought him in and arrested him. He has blood tattooed on one of his hands.
Yep.
And then it came out he was a member of the Bloods gang in Bristol, Connecticut, where he grew up. So even as a football player, with all kinds of things to lose, he was still hanging around with these people and still making all the stupid moves where, you know, you get into an altercation at a club and you go and shoot the guy later. So I was kind of interested to find out that was... It was a little more to the motive than they came out with initially, that they think he was involved in some way in a shooting in 2010, I think it was. And this guy that they just shot, one of them shot, allegedly, supposedly had some kind of information about that, and was talking to somebody who was involved at another club. So they called him out, and called his gang buddies up there, and they dealt with the situation somehow, which was not very thought out at all. Just totally stupid instincts. And you know, there's no place for that. And you think that a guy with that kind of motivation to just quite basically put the nose in the books, you know, and just go do what he does best and stay away from that, you know, all kinds of motivation. He's got a kid coming, you know, just about to get married, got a brand new house.
He goes and does that. It's a shame, you know, especially, you know, when you have opportunities and talents and all that. And I'll tell you another thing, talking to people that have trained in Philadelphia, because I know so many of them, and I get to really follow their stories, people in the papers and everything, and I'm trying to remember if it was Danny Garcia or somebody else recent, you know, Phil hasn't played a recent. And they were talking about, you know, as he's training and everything, and he would get pressure from the gang members to join their gang, and basically he was, you know, declining it because he wanted to follow the path of boxing. You know, he didn't want to be in a gang, and they took that as a sign of disrespect. You know, how ridiculous is that? You know, but that's the mentality they have, this disrespect mentality. Oh, you don't want to be part of our gang, you disrespected us.
Right.
Get out of here, you know. But that and until shit changes, you know, it's what they got to bring back is, you know, harsh punishment. I think gang members get zero tolerance, whether it's, you know, public whippings or something where, you know, right now you get these guys get thrown in jail. That's tape for them. They're going in jail, they're running their gangs in there, and they're getting three hots and a cot, and they're like social gods in there. No. You humble them. You know, you put them on that whipping pole, you give them a flogging. My dad found a video from over in Singapore about a person getting one of those canines, and strung them up, and they gave him 10 lashes across his ass. And by the fourth lash, you could see the welt starting to open up and starting to bleed, and he got like six more, and I was like, man, shit, I wouldn't do nothing, you know, if that was going to be the punishment.
Yeah.
Because, you know, and you know that guy wasn't going to be able to get shit for a few days either.
Yeah. Some secret societies at my school, that was part of the initiation, except they hit you with an axe handle. But anyway, yeah, it's a crazy world we live in, and some people just don't appreciate the life they got, and the fact that their life is short and it's precious.
And you look at this. I mean, how many other, you know, not just athletes, but especially your athletes, you do dumb shit. And I'm not talking about just like your Mike Tysons, because first of all, I still don't think Mike Tyson raped Desiree Washington. I think that was consensual, and then she and her mother were just money hungry. That's my opinion, and obviously I wasn't on the jury, because if it was a jury, it would have been a hung jury. We'd still be there debating it.
Yeah.
Because I don't think he's guilty. And
Matt Remillard is one of those boxers that comes to mind. I think he's doing a 5-year bid right now for smashing a guy in the face with a baseball bat over a girl.
Yeah, dumb shit, you know?
Stupid stuff.
I mean, I don't know. I mean, hey.
But,
Maybe some of us have this problem. It's called morals.
Yeah. Well, here's a guy who is turning it around, I guess. We talked to Hector Camacho Jr. last week. Now we've got Julio Cesar Chavez Jr. in the news. He just got his failed drug test fine reduced from $900,000 to $100,000. The commission members in Las Vegas cut the fine down to a tiny piece because Chavez's attorneys argued that the fine violated the boxer's constitutional rights and negotiated it down to get it reduced. Lost Tony again. Tony didn't like that, so he hung up. You didn't like that story, huh? I know. It's kind of funny, the timing of it. Anyway, Chavez Jr. was not at the meeting. He let his lawyers do the talking for him, and I guess he must have paid them pretty well because they got most of his money back. He got fined on February 28th as a repeat offender of the drug policy because he tested positive for diuretics in 2009. He has served a 9-month suspension that was part of the original punishment and will be returning to the ring September 7th against Brian Vera in Los Angeles, which ought to be a good fight.
Okay,
there's
that talent.
Yeah. He was last on ESPN Friday Night Fights the last time I saw him, anyway.
And yeah, it was an upset, too. It's like I predicted that fight. He's fighting Sergey Zinzer. And I didn't think he was going to beat him.
Yeah, it was a good deal. Good fight, so. Vera took a lot of punishment, though, to get that win. So hopefully he's learned some more defense between then and now. And here's a big story on boxing. Even before they step in the ring to fight, Floyd Mayweather Jr. and Saul Canelo Alvarez are already breaking records. The fight's not going to happen until September 14th, but they already broke the record for Live Gate. Sold out Wednesday, less than 24 hours after tickets went on sale, which apparently has never happened before. Golden Boy Promotions Chief Executive Richard Schaefer told ESPN.com that the fight will generate a minimum of $18,647,000 in ticket sales. And it could go up to a little shy of $19 million, depending on the number of comps that are given out. And that's going to be a record as well. So, pretty big news. They've been doing a big tour around the country. And they decided to actually postpone or actually cancel the stop in Phoenix, Arizona, because of the guys that died in the fire out there, the 19 firemen. So as a show that's friendly to the fireman scene, we'd like to give a shout out to those families too ourselves. And that's rough to go out like that. So more power to him for making that sacrifice. But anyway, the Mayweather fight is definitely going to be a big one. I don't know if it's going to surpass any of Floyd's recent fights as far as the competition level. But we'll see. See what happens. I was really surprised to see Floyd even sign that fight. So,
I wasn't. And the reason I wasn't, like I said, I haven't seen what size ring they're going to fight in yet, but I'm sure, you know, Floyd will, you know, use his influence on the larger size ring. I know it's got exposed, I believe, by Austin Trout. I thought Trout, actually, if he didn't win that fight, it was a lot closer than they had it. So it shows that Canelo, you know, is going to have trouble with a good outside boxer. And, you know, I think it's one where he can make a lot of money. He found, you know, a fighter that is beatable, and the fact that, you know, they're bringing him down to 152 pounds. I mean, 2 pounds might seem like a lot, and then it might not seem like a lot, but when you're bursting at the seams to make 154, those other 2 pounds can be absolute hell. I know going down from 180 to 165, you know, the morning of the first weigh-in, I woke up and I, you know, went down and I got on the scale and I was at like 166.8, you know, and that pound and 3/4 to go, and that pound and 3/4 was rough. I mean, just jump in the sauna and you'll be fine. Well, when you ain't got no water left in your body and your throat is hurting from being dehydrated and like your tongue is swollen and someone says you got 2 more pounds to go, get in the sauna, that's not something easy to hear. And believe me, it takes a lot out of you. I fought a guy And I remember I fought him two times before that, and his punches bounced off me like bullets bouncing on Superman. The first punch he landed on me in our third fight actually rattled my knees a little bit. And in the third round, with me swept the hand on the guard, which was another amazing feat, he threw a right hand and it dropped me right on my ass. And he never buckled me once in our two previous fights. But my legs were so weak. And then even going into nationals, even though I moved up to 172, it was only a week or so later. I hadn't fully regained my strength yet. I still couldn't even run the distances I ran. And I had no strength. My punches had no steam on them going into nationals at all. I was done. My body was shot. And if people don't think 2 pounds makes a hell of a lot of difference, try it when you're damn dehydrated, or try it, you know, when you haven't eaten in a couple days, and you got to know you still got 2 pounds to go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know. It's one of those things. I think that Floyd's got this one in the bag. He picked his opponent for the special reason that he knows he can beat him. And I don't think Canelo Alvarez is busy enough in his fights. He's got some power, but I don't think Floyd hasn't seen that kind of power before and doesn't know how to deal with it.
I know he's going to bring a lot of aggression, but I think he's going to be the type of crowd that Floyd's just going to, you know, eat up. I'm being totally honest. I'd like Canelo to, you know, do well. I'd like to see Canelo make it a competitive fight. I wouldn't mind seeing him win, but I'm going to be honest here, and I don't see it happening.
Me either. And speaking of Showtime, which is the company that made their big deal with Floyd, they're not out of the MMA game just yet, even though they lost Strikeforce to Collapse. They've been talking this week and weeks past about their research on the subject, and they had some comments come out this week from their general sports manager, Stephen Espinoza. He said, we'd like to get back in the MMA business. The hesitation right now is because we're investigating the market. And there's one league that has been talked about as far as them picking it up is Invicta, which is the all-women's league, which would kind of make things interesting because, you know, the UFC is going to try to be picking people out of that one. And even though the UFC turned down any future dealings with them after they got rid of Strikeforce, and the UFC went with Fox after that, Invicta in the women's MMA game, Invicta, for the guys and girls out there that don't know, is an all-women's MMA promotion. And I'm pretty sure that when White got the first few women on the UFC roster, he had a clause in the contracts which allowed them to still fight in Invicta, which is really one of the only leagues out there that's all women, as far as I know. I don't think there is any other well-known one, anyway. And that's one of the only places they'll allow cross-promotion with at this point, just because of the circumstances. That's where a lot of these ladies get their opportunities right now. And it's only a few years old. It's only been around, I think, since 2010 or 9, and it's pretty big. It's getting big. News stories coming out every week, every other day almost on what's going on in Invicta. So somebody's doing a pretty good job with it over there, and it'd be nice to see that on cable TV and get a leg up. Like I've always said, I'm a big advocate of women's fighting in general. I don't think they get enough credit. And I always get the feeling that they're fighting for a little bit more than a belt or the money when I see a women's fight. It's sort of like they're fighting for women everywhere just to prove that women are not less superior than men or not less tough than a guy can be. So they put it all out there sometimes, and makes for good TV, makes for good fighting, so. Hopefully they get that deal going and they keep that promotion up and running and make sure the U.S. doesn't take all their ladies away from them. And I think that's the last big news item I have, so you got anything for the upcoming boxing this weekend?
I don't think we have a whole lot going on this weekend. It looks like on Friday Night Fights, we're going to be up in Hartford, Connecticut. We got Billy Gibb, who's just coming off.
It's 50 Cent's birthday.
We lost to Gradovich on split decision the last time. He's fighting Mike Machine Gun Oliver, who, I don't know if he's still with Iceman John Scully, but I know that was one of Iceman's fighters.
Yeah, he just came out of, like, semi-retirement, Oliver.
Yeah, he lost his last fight almost 2 years ago to Juan Manuel Lopez, and that was a second-round knockout. He pretty much got destroyed. And his other two losses are both, pretty devastating stoppage losses. 25-3, 8 knockouts. He's not a big puncher, doesn't have a good chin, so it doesn't, normally spell for a good combination. He's a really smooth boxer, but he did get beat up pretty good by Gradovich. It was 35-2 with 21 knockouts. He's not a bad fighter. I think we'll be able to beat Oliver. I don't know. A very good chance to be able to stop Oliver. Also on the card, we have Alan Green. He is trying to ruin the undefeated record of Olivier Alvarez, who's originally from Colombia. He's now living out of Montreal, Quebec, Canada. He's 12-0, 8 knockouts. This is a big step up for him. I'll fight Alan Green, who's 32-4 with 22 knockouts. He lost to Mikel Kessler a little over a year ago, pretty devastating fourth round knockout. But he came back and beat a prospect back in November, and Renan Saint Juste, who was 23-3. But I think time might not be on the side of Alan Green. He's been in some tough fights. But we'll see how much he has left. Also on the card, one of the fights I would like to just mention, I can pull it up real quick, is Mark Davis. And if I'm not mistaken, he was a former guest of ours, wasn't he?
Sounds vaguely familiar.
No, we interviewed Mark Tucker. I thought we interviewed Mark Davis, too, from Baton Rouge, Louisiana. 16-0, 5 knockouts. He is fighting a guy by the name of Robert Osobi. 14-5-4 with 6 knockouts. So not too bad there. And let's see if we got anything interesting for Saturday night, which is the 6th. I want to take my mom to the Phillies game, not because they're good or they're going to win, not playing the Braves, but my mom's given name is Lucia. She was born on St. Lucie Day. She goes by Barbara, her middle name, but her real name's Lucia. And my mom is a good cook. Makes good Italian food and really makes a good meatball dish. And it's Mama Lucia Meatball Night. Mama Lucia Meatball Ladies Night. I'm like, Mom, you gotta go to this game. And she doesn't want to go. So I guess I'm not going. But the only fight of significance on Saturday is coming to us from over the seas, United Kingdom, and it's a rematch between David Price and Tony Thompson. Tony the Tiger Thompson scored a big upset back in February with a second round knockout of David Price. He caught him with a wide left hook right on the ear and dropped Price. Price got up, fell all over the ring. They stopped it. He broke his eardrum with that punch and really affected his equilibrium. So we got Thompson, who's 37-3, 25 knockouts. Two of those three losses are stoppages to Vladimir Klitschko. And we got Price, who's 15-1 with 13 knockouts, coming off that big loss. He had some decent wins in there. He knocked out Audley Harrison, who was at one time highly touted, who was recently more of a punching bag. Max Skelton, who was 28-6, he knocked him out in 2 rounds. So he had some good wins on his record until he ran into that right hook. But that's really all we got for major fights this weekend.
All right.
Most people
will
find me on the beach where I should be.
Well, it's the holiday
tomorrow, and we'll have the UFC on Saturday for folks who like the MMA like me. And there's always Friday night fights, Friday night. And next week we will definitely have a guest. I'll be working on that. I don't know if I can get Antonio Tarver. We talked about trying to get him last week, but it turns out that Tarver is like completely off the radar. Like, there's some Japanese company that stole his official website, and AntonioTarver.com is no longer valid, and Antonio-Tarver.com is gone. And the only place I found that I could possibly connect with him was like a talent agency that books appearances for him. And I didn't try communicating through them yet, but they're really hard to find online. I know he's managed by Al Heyman, so I got a feeling maybe the folks from Swanson Communications might know how to get in touch with Al Heyman. So that's my next attempt. It's going to be to try to contact them and see if they know how to get a hold of him. But we'll have somebody next.
I think he's such a great interview because, I mean, the fact that, I mean, I have so much to talk to him about, the fact that, I mean, look at these three just different points that you can actually relate to a guy from Tampa, Florida. One, when he was in the 96 Olympics, Dr. Ken Cox was the ultimate team manager, my former Lock Haven boxing coach. Two, one of Tarver's pro debut fights at the Blue Horizon in Philadelphia, my dad was working corners and they were in the same locker room and he was talking to Tarver. And number three, I filmed on the set of Rocky Balboa 2 days, which he co-starred in.
Cool. So I'll keep working on it.
If we ever get him on, I'm calling dibs on first question.
Okay.
You know what that question is?
Something about Rocky. Gotta be.
Nope.
No.
My first question is, you got any excuses tonight?
That is one of the greatest
pre-fight trash talk comments of all time. Punching glove. Got any questions? Yeah, I got a question. Roy, got any excuses tonight?
Nice. All right, well, I guess that's it for us. Till next week. Sorry Tom couldn't make it, but we'll have our psychic back next week. I guess kind of contradicts him as a psychic that he didn't know we were going to do this a day in advance. I'll never get over that line. You just contradicted yourself as a psychic.
The Iron Man was still here.
Yes.
So, going strong.
For Tom, I guess we could say enjoy the fights, and we will see you next week. We'll have
everybody, please have a happy 4th of July.
No blowing your hands off.
If you're playing with fireworks, make sure to point them in the other direction, and as soon as the fuse lights, run the other way.
Yeah.
And don't eat too much.
Here's a big tip for those folks lighting fireworks. There's special things. They're like sparklers that you can buy, but they're super long. Don't use a match. Don't use a lighter. Use one of those sparkler things so you get some distance between yourself and the wick, because you never know. Sometimes those things are faulty.
What I'm looking to do is just catch a professional fireworks show somewhere.
Yes.
Leave
it to the pros.
My plans are tomorrow. I could end up down the shore. I could end up down in Center City, Philadelphia, watching the big fireworks show over the waterfront. I don't know yet, you know. If I don't see any fireworks this week, I'm going to the Phillies fireworks game next week, and there'll probably be more fireworks by the actual blow-up fireworks. Well, the Pridgeheads, where everybody goes, ooh and ah, more than they'll be on the field, because the Phillies are terrible this year, but that's all right. You know, when you're a fan like me, you got to love them.
Yep.
And the fact that someone was busting my stones today, that my quote-unquote lucky Phillies hat, which they've only won one game this year that I've gone to, they said, well, your hat doesn't seem so lucky. I said, not for the team it is, but for me it is. What do you mean? I'm meeting a ton of girls when I go to these games. A ton of them.
Yeah. Nice.
So.
Yeah, I need a lucky Red Sox hat.
Well, I want to say to my crew, you know, as I said, have a great holiday. Hasta la vista, baby. And until next week, Tornado is now finding out.
All right. Don't be going category 5 through any neighborhoods this weekend, right?
Yeah, right. All right.